Kevin Bacons. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for being here on a Friday night. A little chillier tonight. Anyway, I know we're going into winter. I'm just trying not to think about it too much. But anyway, it is what it is, and we'll muddle through it. And tonight we have two guests that I'm kind of getting to know and respect, and they're brilliant. And they're also trying to help a friend. And the reason I keep talking about this case is because Thomas Deegan is a friend of mine. I respect him. I admire him. I miss his sarcasm. He's helped me learn a lot. He's helped a lot of people out there. He's stuck in a corrupted system. They portray him as totally a crazy man. The Southern Poverty Law Center has put out a hit piece on him. And the odd thing, listeners, that I want you to think about is this man, he can lose his temper just like the rest of us. We're pretty fed up. He didn't say anything different than what the rest of us say. He says, and he kind of sums up what a lot of people across this country are feeling right now. We no longer have laws. They accused him of trying to get a coup going. It seems to me like we've already had the coup several times since the inception of this so-called country. There's been a coup. We've definitely been taken over. I don't know what recourse we have. I don't know what we could do for Tom. We just have to keep hitting it out there. And people, if you can on Facebook, go to Phil Hudock's website, Hudock, H-U-D-O-K .info. Keep up with the alerts and what's going on with Thomas's case and blast those out on your Facebook as well. The more that we can get that out to the general public, I think it will be better for Tom. He does need our help. He needs our support. You know, when you're incarcerated like that, probably in isolation, you do feel kind of abandoned. You feel alone. I pray about him a lot for the Father to give him strength and to courage and to let him know deep down that he's not alone. There's a lot of us out here that are rooting for him, that pray for him, that want him home. I've had a call from his mom. I appreciate that. And she thanked me for talking about this on the show. I don't know what else to do but be able to have a platform with which to talk about this and to keep up with the case, to try to keep it in the limelight. I think that he is safer this way if we can keep him out there in the public venue. And that's what we're here for, because that's what friends do. And tonight we have with us two of his friends. We have Phil Hudock and we have Gene Stalnecker. Welcome to the show tonight, gentlemen.
Hey there. Thanks for having us on.
Hi, Phil. Hi, Gene. Thanks for being here. How about we start? Believe it or not, there's still people that really don't know what's going on with this. Phil or Gene, either one, can you go back to what happened? Why is he locked up in the clink? What brought all this about? And then we'll get into the updates and whatnot.
Yeah, what brought this all about is exactly what you said. We have a coup in this country that began before I was born, or even Gene. Gene's a little older than I am.
That made you feel good, didn't it, Gene?
Yeah. He wasn't supposed to talk like that.
Thomas calls Gene a dinosaur. I think it's mainly because he's not jumped into the digital revolution, okay?
Right on, but, Gene. I'm okay with that.
I can understand it. It's a double-edged sword. It's mainly used for control. I had Charlotte Isherby come and speak in West Virginia one time about public education, and you know who Charlotte Isherby is. She knew about the skull and bones and all that. And we have very smart people, but very evil people who are using everything at their disposal against us, whether it be technology, understanding of human nature and psychology, the media is under their control. They have a spinning plates to the point where most people don't have the the income or the time to mount resistance against them.
And I think that's by design, Phil. They've got to keep us almost subservient to keep us where we don't have the money to mount a revolution.
Don't underestimate them, but then they better not underestimate us, because someone you have to fear is someone that you keep knocking down and they keep getting up, because eventually, if they just keep getting back up, they'll wear you out. So there's been this coup, which Tom's in his wisdom was able to put together and to mount a legal challenge that went to the highest court in West Virginia, that exposed the tyrants for what they are. And for those that didn't know what was going on, they know now. I don't care whether they're in the legislature. I don't care whether they're on the Supreme Court, Attorney General's office, all those folks. They know now what's going on. And if they're not speaking the truth and acting on the truth, then they're the enemy. They're part of the problem. Just like recently, in our Bible studies, we had a clip from Alex Jones, and he said, "The media is your enemy." Now, he's not talking about Aaron Dakin's truth traveler. Okay?
I bet he was, Phil. I'm paranoid.
Well, it's hard not to be paranoid. And there's an expression, sometimes only the paranoid survive.
That's right. A healthy dose of paranoia will do you some good.
That's right. We have to know who our friends are and who our enemies are. You have to know your enemy. As dangerous as it is to get in their mindset,
that's right.
You have to know them.
Well, I think Alex was probably referring to your mainstream media, and I think most of us probably know that.
Exactly.
The alternative media is growing by leaps and bounds. That doesn't mean you're actually hearing the truth from them either. It's a confusing planet we live on.
Well, my dad had a great expression. He said, God gave you a brain, use it. None of us are supposed to be blind in taking other people's opinions and statements. God gave us all a brain, and he didn't make any junk. And that's one of the things I always tell my students, especially when I was teaching biology, and we would talk about genetics and reproduction and everything. And in the books, it's like cookbook. It's like dry. It's like without the beauty of the creator. And so one thing I would tell them is, God didn't make any junk, and he didn't start with you. And whether you realize it or not, you won the lottery, because there were over 100 million other possibilities when you were conceived. So you're special. Everyone out there is special. Now, whether they understand that and whether they take that ball that God has given them and they run with it, that's a different story.
I loved how you put that, Phil. I really do. That was neat.
God gives us the abilities we have. I don't care if you're a doctor, a scientist, a talk show host, no matter what you are, let's give the creator the credit.
Right on.
Let's serve him. Let's serve him. And that's the great thing about Thomas, was he understood that there's something beyond us, and that there is this creator, that we are heirs of the creator. He uses that term. We have
that
to act
he did.
Like it.
Mm-hmm. He did.
We have to act like it, because heirs have responsibility. We're ambassadors. We were probably the only case that ever went to the Supreme Court that entered the King James Bible. We entered it into the record, because that's where it's from the Creator that everything stems.
That's very true.
So
everything we need is right there. The laws that we need are right there.
Exactly.
Period. End of story. All this other stuff, throw it out.
Yes. Michael Perica spoke. I saw him, the recording where he spoke at the Kim Davis rally. And he said, any laws that go against God are not lawful. They may be legal, but they're not lawful. There's a big difference between lawful and legal. Legal is man's definition of right and wrong. Lawful is the Creator's universal, forever law.
Well, couldn't you even say at this point, gentlemen, obviously, we don't have anything lawful, but we probably really don't even have anything legal. We have maritime admiralty codes, rules, regulations, infractions, you name it. I don't even think there's anything legal left in this legal system, do we?
Well, what we've seen by their actions, whether it be obstruction of justice or whatever, as a matter of fact, I'm going to play. You let me know when there's a good time to play a 5-minute clip from Cookie, which is, you know, Thomas's mother. Her real name's Darlene, but we go by Cookie. She's going to tell you what she's had to deal with in just trying to get the paperwork, the public paperwork that's supposed to be available to not just Thomas, but anybody, if you request it. They don't even abide by their legal definition.
No.
They make them up as they go.
They do. They do. They just make stuff up. And, oh, if they don't like how that case turned out, they just change it for the next one.
Exactly.
I particularly like that. Hey, we're at our first break. We'll have a short segment coming up after this. So probably for the clip from Cookie, we'll wait till the next segment. Okay? So we'll be right back after this. Welcome back. We have Phil Hudock and Gene Stelnecker with us this evening. You can visit hudock.info, hudok.info. There are links at the Truth Traveler. Please check it out. You'll be able to keep up with what's going on from that site. Now, Phil, let's go back. We digressed. I know we do that all the time. What happened? Why did he get in so much trouble?
Telling the truth.
Yeah, that'll get you.
He was exposing a criminal cabal of usurpers who are saying they are government, but they're actually not government. They're private for-profit corporations using government coercion, which is good for people. Thomas was, if they're saying he was trying to overthrow the government, no, he was trying to restore what the framers, you know, what their intent was. He wasn't trying to overthrow it. He was trying to restore lawful government. And these folks should have, when everything was exposed, they should have done the honorable thing. The leadership and the three branches of government should have resigned and said, you know what? Yep, we have violated the law. We violated the Constitution. We don't have a constitution. We have a constitutional crisis. Our constitution has been hijacked, both state and national. That's a threat to the system. And as George Carlin says, it's a big club. You ain't in it. They don't want you in.
That's right.
So,
no, we're not in it.
I'd like Gene to give his evaluation before we go any further.
Go ahead, Gene.
We have to be careful what we say, since this thing is they've already got him in the court system, and don't want to jeopardize that. But I'd like to read from that way. It won't be anything that I say. It's very obvious, you know, once you listen to this, that we're in grave trouble. Not just from West Virginia, but the whole country. So
okay.
I'll read. This is reading from our state constitution. I'll read the first page, which is in under Article 1, and then I'll skip over to Article 3. This is Article 1, Section 2, the first page of our constitution. The government of the United States is a government of enumerated powers, and all powers not delegated to it, nor inhibited to the states, are reserved to the states or to the people thereof. Among the powers so reserved to the states is the exclusive regulation of their own internal government and police, and is a high and solemn duty of the several departments of government created by this Constitution to guard and protect the people of this state from all encroachments upon the rights so reserved. So we see here what's going on. The federal government actually has taken over, just from reading this part here, because they're dictating to the states everything that they have to do. So in Section 1-3, continuity of constitutional operation. The provisions of the Constitution of the United States and of this state are operative alike in a period of war as in time of peace. And any departure therefrom or violation thereof under the plea of necessity or any other plea is subversive of good government.
Okay, Gene, hold that. It's subversive right there. Hold that and we'll pick it up on the other side of the break. We'll be right back. Right before the break, you left off at subversive, Gene.
I'll just go back to Article 1, Section 2, and just touch it again, since we've been gone here. I'll reread part of it. It is the high and solemn duty of the several departments of government, which is a state government we're speaking of, created by this Constitution, which I'm reading from, to guard and protect the people of this state from all encroachments upon the rights so reserved. Well, we see that the federal government has encroached in every area of our life, so, but our state's not protected us. And this was in our paperwork to the Supreme Court, which in the end, their final decisions, they totally ignored all that. No, didn't even touch on it. And then we'll go to Section 1, Article 1, Section 3, the Constitution of this state and the United States are operative alike in a period of war as in time of peace. So that means that it doesn't end, you know, even though the federal government's taken over, it's not supposed to end according to our Constitution.
And so they basically just stuck your Constitution under the nearest rock.
They don't read it. No. Any departure therefrom or violation thereof under the plea of necessity or any other plea, so there is no plea, is subversive of good government. So they've subverted our government, our own state representatives. And this was all put in our action to Supreme Court. So we'll go over to Article 3, rights reserved to the people. Government is instituted for the common benefit, protection, and security of the people, nation, or community, of all its various forms that is the best, which is capable of producing the greatest degree of happiness and safety, and is most effectually secured against the danger of maladministration. And when any government, including this one, it's my add-on, any government shall be found inadequate or contrary to these purposes, a majority of the community has an indubitable, inalienable, and indefeasible right to reform, alter, or abolish it in such manner as shall be judged most conducive to the public will. I don't see any out on that anywhere. That covers all. And this was also submitted in our action to the Supreme Court, totally ignored. We get now to the writ of habeas corpus, which in Tom's situation, totally ignored. It was ignored by a magistrate who even ordered the sheriff not to deliver it. The privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended. No person shall be held to answer for treason, felony, or other crime not cognizable by justice, unless on presentment or indictment of a grand jury. No bill of attainder, ex post facto law, or law impairing the obligation of a contract shall be passed. This was all violated. Excessive bail not required. This was violated.
Big time.
Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishment inflicted. Penalties shall be proportioned to the character and degree of the offense. No person shall be transported out of or forced to leave the state for any offense committed within the same, nor shall any person in any criminal case be compelled to be a witness against himself or be twice put in jeopardy, his life, liberty, for the same offense. Then we go to 3.6, unreasonable searches and seizures prohibited. The rights of citizens to be secure in their houses, persons, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. No warrant shall issue except on probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, particularly describing the place to be searched or the person to, thing to be seized. We got this has been violated. Seems like the police have they've lost their search warrant somewhere. We can't get record of it. Freedom of speech and press guaranteed. No law abridging the freedom of speech or of the press shall be passed, but the legislature may, by suitable penalties, restrain the publication or sale of obscene books, papers, or pictures, and provide for the punishment of libel. So the freedom of speech is no limit, the way this reads. No limit on freedom of speech. You say it, if someone is hurt by it, and that would be the recourse, but not through what is said, because no law abridging the freedom of speech.
Well, and that's kind of where they're saying that he has a problem, isn't it?
Well, that's where they say they've charged him from what he said.
Are they charging him with something like treason?
Terrorist remarks.
Well, let's see. I've heard Farrakhan come out and publicly say it's open season on white people. Kill the white people. And oh, by the way, let's just throw in kill the cops too. Did he get in trouble?
Well, that's it. This we're not working both ways on on this.
No.
Now this is strictly a one-way street, you know, and it all goes back to the War Powers Act, which we also put in it. It goes back to 1933, the War Powers Act, where they amended 33 was actually a Banking Act, which amended the 1917 War Powers Act, which the 1917 described various people from other countries in this country as being potential enemies of the during the war there, First World War. But when they amended it on the Banking Act, which was actually an act that was written and proposed by the Federal Reserve, somehow they got in there that every citizen of the United States was the enemy. So we became the enemy, and we've been under war powers ever since.
That's right.
And that's why nothing applies. We're the enemy. The whole country's under the war powers. So they've captured the whole states and
so
the people thereof.
What's the recourse here then? Is there a recourse?
Well, we've tried to recourse, so I'll leave it up to your own speculation. We went through all the paperwork and it was totally ignored. We got an answer, but they didn't answer anything that we brought up except the writ that we asked for. The writ was denied. Nothing else in the decision was spoken of. So they acquiesced to everything that we said. It was true.
Okay.
Yes, and one of those things that they acquiesced to was that Thomas was kidnapped in 2010.
Now, wait, say that again, Phil.
Yes, Thomas in 2010 was taken without an arrest warrant. That's called
kidnapping. Oh, they didn't have a warrant for that one?
No, they did not. And that was outlined in the complaint, and it was not addressed.
At the risk of sounding really stupid, how can they do that?
we just said that they make up the laws as they go.
Because they've had him on house arrest? I mean, everything from that.
That's right. All this stems from lawless actions. And Gene has brought out all the black and white constitutional safeguards that the Attorney General, the Governor, the Legislature, the Supreme Court, how can they argue with this? It's the supreme law of the land. And Gene only missed one phrase. Article 1, Section 3. Okay, I'll go to the end of it. It says, any departure from or violation thereof under the plea of necessity or any other plea is subversive of good government and tends to anarchy and despotism. Anarchy and despotism is exactly what we see, and it hasn't peaked yet.
Okay.
It's only going to get worse.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the anarchy is not on... It's not the people that's creating the anarchy. It's the government.
True.
So it's kind of a two-edged sword there, I'd say. But that's the way it's working.
It is working. And you're right. It's only going to get worse. I feel like the more they convolute everything, just like the IRS laws, okay? Well, quasi-laws, okay, whatever. It gets more and more confusing. They're doing that with this supposed legal system. It gets so confusing, you don't know what to do. When you file things, quote-unquote, lawfully or legally, and they just ignore it?
Yeah.
You know, I've had several people ask me, and you guys might want to address this, if Tom Deegan was part of the sovereign citizen movement.
In the troopers... testimony.
Well, hold that thought, Phil. We're going to lose it, so hold that thought. We'll pick this up on the other side about the sovereign citizen movement. All right, we'll be right back with Phil Hudock and Gene Stelnecker. Welcome back to the Truth Teller. Now, Phil, right before the break, you were explaining about the sovereign citizen thing.
Thomas is really the authority on this kind of stuff. Gene is probably next, and I'm probably last, but I've learned a lot, okay, in just the year that I've known Thomas. And I want to read the definition of citizen from the Black's Law Dictionary, fifth edition.
Okay.
Okay, citizen. One who, under the Constitution and laws of the United States or of a particular state, is a member of the political community owing allegiance and being entitled to the enjoyment of full civil rights. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside, U.S. Constitution, 14th Amendment. So this all refers back to the 14th Amendment. Now, the 14th Amendment, most people think that freed the slaves. No, 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 no. What the 14th Amendment did was enslave everyone. So Thomas, who is Thomas David House of Deegan, expatriated because the government was way out of line, and you have the right, according to the Expatriation Act, okay, which says you have, everyone has that right, not just someone who comes into the United States and says, you know, I want to renounce my Yugoslavian citizenship and repatriate to the United States. Thomas expatriated from this criminal system and repatriated to the Creator, you see. So when they say sovereign citizen, sovereign means you have not made a contract. You are sovereign, meaning you are under your own authority, whereas citizens, according to this, it has to do with the 14th Amendment and tying yourself to the federal government. And that was the whole idea of the 14th Amendment, was to snooker everyone into thinking that it was an amendment of freedom, and it was actually an amendment of slavery.
Also an illegal amendment. They didn't have full Congress there.
Yeah, they've been practicing unlawful actions for a long time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, a long time. I don't even know if we've really had a lawful system that we thought we did.
Right.
Ever.
Right. And I believe sovereign citizen was a term that was created by the establishment think tanks. You see, here's how they operate, Aaron. I've learned their psychology, okay? For instance, you take the war in the Middle East, you know, the Gulf War, Iran, Iraq. Christianity and Islam are incompatible. They're oil and water, okay? What they do is they create an enemy, and then all, you know, it's like pointing a gun at someone, and then eventually they just turn the gun on somebody else. And, you know, using the Muslims was divide and conquer, and now what are we talking about? Not terrorism from so much outside the country, but it's what's that homegrown terrorism. So that was always the plan, and I believe sovereign citizen was a term that they created. It was a label that they could attach to anyone, and they already had the definition determined. All they had to do was just stick it on somebody. Now, Thomas never said sovereign citizen. He knew that those two terms are opposite.
That's right. Exactly.
Well, that's a term coined also by the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Hold that right there. Our favorite group, the Southern Poverty Law Center. Gentlemen, we've got a long break, then we'll be up for a long segment. So we'll pick up with the SPLC after this. Gene Stelmick, and we're discussing Thomas Deegan and his illegal kidnapping / incarceration. Now, right before the break, you mentioned those four letters that I hate, but anyway, go ahead. I think Phil was talking about it, right?
Yeah.
Oh, the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Yeah, those. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All you have to do is look at the founder, Morris Deeds. What a sleazebag. You wouldn't want him for a neighbor, let's just put it that way. They are a hit piece. They definitely do not have the same mindset as the founders of this country. They demonize anybody who goes against the establishment. I'd say they're an establishment bulldog. And I had my personal run-in with them when I was running for U.S. Senate. What they said about me was absolutely true. Yeah, I do have a problem with forced vaccinations. Yes, I am a Christian. Yes, I am against same-sex marriages. That's not what this country was founded upon. That's not what God wants in his people. They claimed I was one of the dirty dozen of political candidates. They called me an extremist. It's dangerous to be right when the government is wrong, especially when they have people like the SPLC who is instructing law enforcement on who the enemy is, and they're usually righteous people.
Well, most recently, though, they're now getting federal funding to run their group, which was previously private. But now they're receiving federal funding to violate people's rights. And see, they've listed the Constitution Party and their members, and even Ron Paul previously as being on their list, and I think they had to back down from that because of communication that was sent to them and to people's representatives. But they're back again. Now our tax money's paying the...
Yeah,
again.
Yeah, I really like that, right.
Yep.
Yeah, I was going to say, at one point, the FBI removed them from their website. However, mm-hmm. federal government turns around and finances them, so don't throw me in the briar patch.
Well, exactly. I think everything's going to get worse now that they're getting paid. Well, officially getting paid, I should say.
Yeah, they'll have unlimited money now. They won't have to worry about putting their own money in it.
they'll use our money against us,
yeah,
right? And so
yeah,
one of the things I plan to do, and I know Thomas plans to do, because I sent him the hit piece just a few days ago, he should be get it any day, is to rebut the what they've said. We need to turn their words against them, just as we showed the Supreme Court of West Virginia that the Constitution says it all. It's right there.
Is there any way? Well, I don't think the Constitution was perfect by any means, but it's certainly better than what we have now. Is there any way that, of course, I preface this by saying I think this is the end times, but is there any way we'll ever get back to something that closely resembles it? Or is it just gone, poof?
We could. It wouldn't be that complicated, but you can't do it with the evil people that's in there.
Right.
You would think people would be afraid to attempt it, but the structure is there to have a structure that is for the people. So it's the perversion of it by the people that's in there is the problem. You could easily go in and correct just about everything, just leaving it the way it is.
Okay.
Duty is ours, and consequences are the Lord's. The biggest problem this country has is a moral meltdown. You can't have a moral government without moral people. And one of the things they did, which we showed in our paperwork, was they subverted the churches by incorporation when West Virginia Article 6, Section 47 says churches are prohibited from incorporating. So we were getting at the true foundation of what has led to a moral meltdown. You can't have muzzled churches and immoral people.
We shouldn't have 501c3 churches.
No. It's unlawful.
If the government would get out of the churches and allow the churches back into government, okay, we might not have this problem.
Well, the problem's with the churches, though.
That's exactly it.
It's not with the government, that part of it. It's with the churches for taking that. They don't have to.
They don't have to, but I guess money talks, doesn't it?
I think they've been coerced into it by having, by believing that they have to.
Exactly.
When we founded a church of our own here in West Virginia, when we founded that church, in our bylaws, we said that we would not be a tax-exempt entity, that we were a church. And the IRS kept sending us, you know, literature and papers and stuff telling us, you know, we need to fill these forms out and register. So it all went in the trash can. We never were a tax-exempt church as far as IRS goes.
Well, did they keep bugging you, though, Gene? I mean, putting thumb screws to you?
For about 2 years, they did. I was the secretary of the new church, and the mail would come to me, so I just trashed it all.
Okay.
It was in our bylaws already that we wasn't going to incorporate. We had discussed all that before we started the church.
Okay. Well, sadly, it seems like most of the pastors, preachers, reverends, whatever you want to call them, aren't like you. There's a lot of them out there. I don't know if they feel coerced. They really want the tax break. They can build these great big mega churches. I don't know. I know that they've lost the message. They're not what I would consider a church any longer.
Yes. Now, Gene and I are members of the West Virginia Constitution Party, and one of the members has a friend who is in with the Franklin Graham ministry, Franklin Graham being Billy Graham's son.
Right.
And he's making a tour of the 50 states, and he is going to preach on the steps of each capital. And one of the things we decided was that I had produced a two-part DVD set called Free the Churches, and that was part of our 2014 run for Senate move, was to also inform the churches that they're non-taxable. They don't have to get a tax exemption. They're non-taxable. And that's
they're,
what... That's
they're also
the
violating the West Virginia Constitution.
Exactly.
So they're all breakers.
I have it under authority that Franklin Graham is going to get this information that the person who it was delivered to was not aware that West Virginia, even though he's a West Virginia, you know, he domiciles here in the state, he did not know. Most people do not know that. Unfortunately, you take it to a church, and they're scared to death of the IRS. You just mentioned that it's they're prohibited from incorporating, and they turn white as a ghost and leave.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I've got a listener that said that you need to structure the church as a PAC, you know, the Political Action Committee, so they're tax exempt. Then they can talk politics.
No. If you have to be a corporation to take a tax exemption. And if you take a corporation, you are now a fiction, a creation of the state. That's the
right.
Last thing a church should do.
Well, I think it's what's gotten us a lot of trouble.
They just have to speak out.
Yeah.
Just as Thomas, Jean, and I spoke out.
True. What's the next move with Thomas's case? Any plans for anything?
Miles has said, we need to take this to the court of public opinion. That's exactly what I intend to do. I want people to go to hudoc.info, especially this coming Sunday night, because I will have new information up there. It will be updated on a regular basis. We are going to fight an information war here. It's an information battle, an info war, as Alex Jones calls it. I will be speaking at WVU to a history class on December 1st, and I have rented a room at the Ramada Inn in Morgantown. The same night, I will be speaking at the Ramada Inn on our constitutional crisis.
Hold that thought at where you're speaking and when. We'll give that out on the other side of this break. That way we don't lose it, okay? We'll be right back. You said right before the break that you were going to be giving a talk. You want to repeat that for people? You said you were going to give a talk this weekend?
Oh, no. It's December 1st,
okay.
Tuesday. 1 to 2:15, I'll be speaking to a history class at WVU. And then that evening at 7:30, I've rented a meeting room at the Ramada Inn in Morgantown. I will be touring the campus, announcing that I will be speaking on the constitutional crisis at the Ramada Inn. Hopefully, we'll be able to live stream both the history class and the presentation at the Ramada. This is going to be first in a series of tours around the state, bypassing the media, the Fourth Estate, which is really the Fourth Reich. In 2014, when I was running for Senate, there was a news blackout on everything I did, even though I toured the state from north to south, east to west, made stops in 40 cities, contacted the media, had a couple promises, and nobody covered it. Nobody. Even though
well, of course
I was on the
not.
Ballot. You know, it's a corporate media, just like it's a corporate government, as a matter of fact. You might as well say it's that big club. How much time do we have before the next break? Because I do want to play a clip.
We've got to do that. This is the short segment. So after this next break, we'll have a long segment,
okay.
And we'll have you play it. Because I feel
right.
bad for her, too. I mean, this is stressing me out. I can't imagine being his mother.
They've done everything to make it hard or impossible to communicate, for Thomas to defend himself. Even the phone call that I got from Thomas, the quality was so bad, and he only gets 1 to 2 calls a day, that it was almost impossible to understand what he said. I'm going to email you that audio file, and
okay.
You listen to it.
I would love to. Please do email it to me. Okay.
Oh, I will. I will.
And something else interesting, real quick. You have a link up on your site. I don't know if I've got it still pulled up. It's the one where you talk about the phone calls. Where's it go? Warning, fake phone calls. Okay?
Yeah, something very strange is going on.
I keep having it happen at my house, Phil.
It's happening all over the country.
It happened to me just the other day. I was talking to Pastor Butch. I said, and I heard somebody clicking in. I said, let me see who this is. And I said, oh, I'm calling myself. Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
I'm really talented.
The first time I heard about it, Thomas was talking to Alicia. And he's talking to Alicia on one phone. His other phone rings, and caller ID says it's her. But he's talking to her on the same lot, on the same phone, on a different phone in his place, you see. And then, after Thomas was arrested or taken, and I went to go see Cookie, his mother, Darlene, and tried to console her, she was very standoffish. She said, what I found out was she got a call, supposedly from my phone. My wife and I, neither of us were home. That was the day after Thomas was arrested. She had a phone call from our phone saying, do not ever call this number again. It was a woman's voice. It was my wife, because we were chaperoning a bus tour to Beckley, to an exhibition coal mine for a high school.
Okay.
And after that, we've been getting phone calls here from our own phone, and we've heard this from numerous people. What's happening?
Yeah, it's the same way. Mine's been like that recently, too, since this incident. And it'll show up my own number.
Well, I'd like to blame Thomas for this, but this was happening to me before this. I don't know if it's something when they're trying to record our calls, I don't know what it is. Just playing games? I don't know. I need somebody that's a little bit smarter in techie stuff than me, because I don't know what they're doing. I know I get calls from numbers that are no longer in service. I get those a lot. They drive me crazy. Okay. We'll be right back after this and get that audio ready, Phil. We have a caller on the line. I've asked him to wait for just a minute. We're going to have Phil play the message from Darlene Deacon. Whenever you're ready,
yes,
Phil.
I want to say, with this telephone fraud and this poor woman thinking that we had thrown Thomas under the bus, and then I want you to listen to what happened when she tried to get the search warrant papers from first the circuit clerk and then the state police. So here we go.
This is Phil. I'm going to dub in the clip from Cookie, which didn't actually make it onto the broadcast that night. Here goes.
I went down to the circuit clerk back again today because I went down there, spent $21 yesterday on copies of anything that I thought would be important.
Mm-hmm.
And because I told her that I wanted a copy of the search warrant also, that's when she just handed me Tommy's new little folder. And I got home yesterday and was looking through it, and there was no copy of the search warrant. I told James, like, I am so sorry. I am going to have to go back. So I went back today. The same lady I saw yesterday, I think she got aggravated with me. And I was like, well, ma'am, I said I'm back today because I didn't get a copy of the search warrant. And I said, that's what I would like to have today. So she tried to find it on the computer, in the computer system, and then she went back and got the head lady, and the head lady came up, and she was as rude as could be to me, because she was like, you do realize this is not for free. And I said, yes, ma'am, I just spent $21 here yesterday, so I know it's $1 a page. I need a copy of the search warrant. She's like, well, she was flipping through the little folder, she's like, well, I don't see it in here. And I said, well, where is it? She's like, well, I don't know. I said, okay, so why isn't it in this paperwork? She said, ma'am, this paperwork is public, for public knowledge that they can access. And evidently, they don't want the search warrant on there so people can see it. I was like, so what do I need to do? So she looked up the arrest warrant, seeing where it was, the state police, and she's like, do you know whose signature this is? And I said, no, ma'am. I said, I know that Kevin Williams was involved. I said, but that's not his signature.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, well, you're gonna have to go to Route 47 to state police and ask them. And she's like, I don't even know if they're going to give it to you. it's like, okay, so evidently they called ahead before I got there. And I went in, the lady's like, can I help you? And I said, yes, ma'am. I'm here to get a copy of a search warrant. She looked at me, and she's like, we don't give copies. And she walked away. Well, she sent another man up to the little window, and he's like, can I help you? And I said, yes, sir. I was like, I'm here to get a copy of the search warrant. I said, circuit clerk's office told me to come here because you all have the search warrant, and I would like to have a copy of it, please. Well, who is the officer? And I said, I don't know. I couldn't read his name. He says, well, where was the search warrant executed? I said, Mineral Wells. What was the name? I said, Thomas Deegan. Well, that, opened up his eyes, and he said, I know exactly who the officer is. He said, you can write your name and number down on this piece of paper, and we will have him call you. And I said, so does that mean I'm going to get a copy of the search warrant? He's like, I really can't tell you that. He's like, it depends on what he decides. He decides if he wants to give it to you or not. I was like, okay. I said, I just have one more question. I said, now if this officer decides that he doesn't want to let me have a copy of the search warrant, because even though I have a copy still, there's a page missing. I've been through this before, and I know there's a page missing.
Right, exactly.
So I said, so if the officer doesn't want to give me a copy, I said, so does that mean I need to come back here with a FOIA request? And he just looked at me. He walked away from the window. And I told Gina, it's like the hairs were standing up on the back of my neck. And I said, they were not very happy with me. And I said, I left. I said, because I didn't trust being in there. And I know that they already called ahead and said I was coming. But I got nothing.
Well, we're going to move to the caller, Gene, if that's okay. I think we'll do that and wait till Phil hopefully pops back on again. We do have Tom in Baltimore. Tom, are you still there?
Yes, ma'am, I am. It's interesting that you're talking about phone calls, because when I read the statement of charges, aside from it being very light and facts, filled with a lot of hearsay, which I later found out is acceptable, even at the hearing, which is surprising, a lot of states at the hearing, it wouldn't be acceptable to have hearsay with no one to back it up. But
right.
Nonetheless, they did. My question was, though, I've become familiar with Tom through your show, Aaron, and he's always been very knowledgeable and very serious about what he was doing within the court system in a nonviolent, legal way. And when you were talking about people having negative views towards him, I can see why. When you read a lot of the newspaper articles, they take a lot of things that he said out of context. For instance,
Correct. You
know, taking over the Capitol. Now, just like with an arrest, you can have an actual arrest or a constructive arrest, actual possession of something or constructive possession. Now, he talked about a gathering. I never heard him say anything about knocking doors down and knocking people down and storming the Capitol. He was talking about a gathering from what I heard, and even from the statements, which they make seem very inflammatory in the statement of charges. If I heard the correct phone call, that was a phone call that started out serious, but then devolved when it seemed like, and I only heard this after the fact, but you had people getting on the line just making a mockery of it. And
yes.
Tom was being cut, his voice was being cut out. You couldn't hear certain things. So I'm wondering if he might have said, you know, look, hypothetically, you know, if you want to act crazy, you know, this is what some people would do. I don't recommend it. And then they take, you know, the most inflammatory thing and leave out that which would exonerate him. I'm wondering if anyone has authenticated and gone over that tape to see exactly what might have been taken out of context, which might completely clear him if they can show that that's not authentic and doesn't really show what he actually was saying, because I've never heard him advocate anything violent, illegal, or terroristic, for that matter, as they're making them out the same. And by the way, I hope he's gotten a new lawyer. I hope they've helped him in some way to get someone that he can work with so he can put on some type of defense. It seems like their case really is rather weak.
Well, their case is very weak, but I don't know if there's an attorney that can even can stand with him. I don't know. Gene, is anybody... Go back to the tape, because the way I understand it, and Gene, please correct me if I'm wrong, because Tom had called me, and he told me about a guy that was kind of poking at him, okay? And he sent me the file that was like a YouTube video of this guy calling out Tom Deegan. So I listened to it, and I said, Tom.
Oh, that was that agent.
That agent. Yeah. I said, yeah. This guy's a Fed. This guy's current military alphabet soup. He's setting you up. You need to be careful. And that's where it all spiraled out of control. And I haven't listened. I've listened to bits and pieces of that phone call. It's very hard to keep anybody's voice straight. You're right, Tom. Very hard.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there were people making very inflammatory, goofy comments just you know, in the middle of people's sentences, and with whatever type of phone system, I probably was computerized, they were using, you would lose whole chunks of what someone said previous to parts of their comments and then following parts of their comments. So what I'm saying is if you had someone and a forensic audiologist go over that, they could probably show, based on what I've heard Tom say in the past, it seems totally out of character that these statements would have just come out of his mouth without being qualified in some way to show that, look, you know, this is what some people would do, I don't recommend it, or who knows when you're missing what seems to be chunks of information, and that's what the whole case is based on.
Well, let me explain something. You know, the case, see, was held in magistrate court. Well, magistrate cannot issue a verdict. They can't make a charge against a person. They're just there to see if what's brought to them is worthy of sending on.
Right, I understand that. It's like a preliminary hearing in Maryland.
Yeah, it's just a hearing.
But I hope someone is representative of the defense for the grand jury, and I know that oftentimes they're not represented in any way, but if there's any way you get someone in there to at least show that, look, this evidence has been taken out of context, if in fact that's the case, and if you have a professional forensic audiologist to say or to have written an affidavit stating that, look, there are large chunk of this missing, there's a reasonable doubt right there.
Yeah. Well, if you look, and we have, I've analyzed the whole thing. I've analyzed every dot and every mark on it, and the thing is so rife with errors and misstatements and misinformation that it'd be a fiasco if they let it go any farther. It really would be a fiasco if
someone doesn't step forward and say exactly what you're saying. I think they're going to railroad them that way, though.
Hey, guys, can we hold these thoughts for just a minute? We're going to get a break, and we'll be right back after this. And if Phil, if you're lurking, we could not hear the phone call, the message. So we'll be right back. Welcome back to The Truth Traveler. Our guest tonight has been Phil Hudock, if he's back. Gene Stelnecker.
Is Phil back?
Am I on?
Well, you're on now.
we
couldn't hear a word.
That is strange, because I could hear you talking, but I couldn't contact you. Let me try again. Are you ready?
Well, no, we're not. We don't have time, Phil. What I'll have you do, call me next week, and I'll tell you what to do with it so we can play it, okay?
Yes.
That's fine. We've got Tom on the line, too. And Tom and Gene, you started to say something before the break.
I think Gene was going to follow up maybe on Tom having an affirmative defense with a new lawyer. I'm not sure. I was...
That's right.
Pretty much done stating what I had thought were points that might be valuable in his defense. because, like I said, of all the times I've listened to him speak with you and on other programs, in fact, I was on a conference call, if you recall, with him and Jim, speaking to the woman, I think, in Arkansas, and, you know, every time that he's spoken, it's always been about the legal system, about the law, about how laws have changed, how laws have been warped. Everything that the newspapers have written really have warped the few conference calls that I heard, which, like I said, were very choppy. There were items that clearly were cut off and missing. There were people who were on there, obviously, simply to disrupt the call and to say outrageous things. It wasn't coming from Tom's mouth. And again, he could have made comments. For instance, one of the newspapers reported he wanted people to take over the local hotels. I heard him say that, you know, if people needed to rent hotel rooms, then, you know, the law of necessity would state that, you know, if you don't have a tent, then you have to rent all the rooms. And I'm not speaking verbatim, so I can't recall verbatim, but I never heard him say anything about taking over local businesses. And that's just one example of how some of the papers have distorted what he has said. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering how much of that is are they going to try to bring into this court case to really make him look like something that I've never seen him to be or heard him to be?
Do you have anything to say, Phil or Gene, to that?
I will be putting up clips from some of these conference calls so people can hear that he always said he didn't want anyone to get hurt. He didn't want violence, okay? As far as an attorney, there's no way Thomas can take a bar attorney, which you have to be a bar attorney to operate in a court. They will not accept anyone who is just a counsel to Thomas. These bar association attorneys are registered foreign agents, and they're officers of the court. They're incorporated under the West Virginia Supreme Court. So, you know, you're not going to have the enemy on your team, and that's what it would be. So he just needs freedom to be out and to be able to craft his case, and that's why there's a donate button on the hudoc.info. We need to get him out. This $300,000 cash-only bail is ridiculous. They don't want him out. Let's show that we aren't going to accept that.
Would they accept property in lieu of the cash bond?
No.
Cash only.
Yeah. Cash only. That's because they're going to keep it.
Well, the circuit clerk has assured me that cash bonds are returned. Okay. Of course, these are criminals, but and that's why they've set it at $300,000 cash. When, if he's found guilty, the fine can only be $25,000.
Now, can that be set for a separate hearing simply on the bail with another magistrate or another judge or on a collateral attack?
We'll try anything. I do not put much stock in that.
Well, gentlemen, Tom, thanks for calling. I appreciate it. I appreciate you being out there.
Thanks.
Gene and Phil. Phil, I will definitely talk to you next week. Okay?
Let
me know.
Thank you.
And tell Cookie we're praying for Tom. And listeners, we'll see you back Monday. All right. Have a super evening.